dark side. 2-1-0.
Trapped on an island with nothing to do. What games would you take there with you? With no one else around, you could go insane without your desert island games. Everyone is tuning in to Jail 76 Gaming.
Hello and welcome to Desert Island Games Christmas Special. This is Desert Island Patmos. Without further ado, I wanted to introduce my guest for this Christmas special, who you already have guessed who it is, because the name's in the title, but it's Patmos. Hello and welcome, Patty.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Can I call you Patty, is that okay?
You can call me Patty, it's fine. Although you might want to call me Bruce, I don't know.
Bruce, yeah. Yeah, because you were saying before we come on, you had Bruce Willis squinty face. I don't really know what that means, but it sounds weird.
Well, that's crazy. It's like, you know, in the past, like, let's say 15 years of Bruce Willis's career, he's done nothing but squint at everything and pout. And for some reason, I woke up this morning with my face in solid squinty pout. And thank God I still have hair, but I have the urge to start a blues band and sing about beer, and I don't understand. So I'm scared, John. I'm scared.
So you might burst into random beer songs as the show goes on then?
It may happen. Yeah, very 80s sounding blues. It's going to be interesting.
It's all entertainment.
Standby.
Yeah, and thank you for coming on and spending your time on this Christmas edition.
No, thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you on the Desert Island.
So, that's a compliment, I think.
No, it is.
Pleasure to have you stranded here somewhere in Desert Island. We're going to die here, John. And you want me here. I see how it is.
You won't die here.
What a domino. Miles.
It's complete luxury, honest.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case,
please. I never worked out how the people that come here get stranded in the first place, but I'll leave that to people's imagination.
Just luck, I guess.
Yeah. So this is going to be a bit different because you're not what we'd call a massive games fan, are you, I believe?
Yeah, not really. I have a respect for the art medium and the entertainment of games, but I can't in any way, shape, or form claim that I'm a gamer because that would be wrong. I would have just as much right claiming that I am a lasagna, and I may look like one on some days, but I'm not.
Desert Island lasagnas.
Yep, exactly.
I apologise if you hear the Desert Island cat in the background meowing. Can you hear that?
I can, actually. The Desert Island painting-ass dog that needs to lay the hell down seems to be enjoying himself, too.
Yeah. Okay, but we'll get to what your items are going to be later, but just as I usually do, usually ask a couple of questions before we get started. Get to know you questions for the people listening out there.
Fire away, Johnny boy.
Right, so you've been on this YouTube since 2006. I see. Did you always make videos from that early stage, or did that come later?
The early stuff was just like most of us, I think, where it'd be like, you know, you record a stupid thing with your friends, and you're like, oh, let's put this on YouTube. Why? I don't know, because I don't even understand how YouTube works. And then, yeah, it was just a couple of those things, and then I abandoned it, my channel primarily, and then it was pretty much just there to watch, just weird claymations from all over the world and Chad Vader episodes. But then, a couple years ago, I don't actually remember what the year was that I officially started getting active, but I was like, nah, yeah, you got an account, use it. So.
Yeah. It seems to be the trendy thing to do these days.
It does. A lot of us seem to have had the, well, I've got the account, and then I don't do anything, like, important with it. Not to imply that anything I do is important. But, you know, not becoming an active participant in the world that is YouTube.
Right.
Oh, shut up, Penguin. Go ahead. Anyway.
Yeah, so on the subject of joining up and starting making videos, you seem to have been, I've missed the start of this because I've not known you for as long as a lot of people, but so how did you get involved with the gaming? You seem to have been adopted by the gaming community.
I was just a stray that wandered around on the road and one of you guys just stopped and pulled me over, but in a weird way. My entire YouTube existence can be tied to Half-Life, because, and this is stumble factor, so get your stumble factor glasses on. I don't have Half-Life on my computer anymore, because the computer that had it went kaboom, and somewhere along the line I lost my CD, whatever.
Yeah.
So years ago, the same year that I, or maybe a couple months before the year that I joined YouTube, whatever, I started watching playthroughs, because
right.
That was as close as I was going to get. And then after I finished one playthrough, I was stumbling around trying to find a playthrough of Half-Life 2, because surprise ending, I've never actually played that one. And I was having a very difficult time finding one that was not a just infuriating pile of teenagers swearing over everything.
Mm.
But one of those that I had found, in the recommended section, there was an Archfiend video. And Archfiend looked like someone I went to high school with, so there was that moment of, wah, Shane, is that you? So I clicked on that, and then through Archfiend, it was right at the same time as the Cammy Bams drama that I don't even remember what the fuck it was about, and I had subscribed to Archfiend, and one of the channels that had done a response in defense of Cammy Bams, Archfiend had shared all of them, and because the drama, I don't know, somehow I helped by subscribing to all those channels.
Mm-hmm.
Unsubscribed to most of them, but then one of them, I kept around and I became friends with them. And from them came Lawn Boy Spouse 1975. My dear Dave had been thumping around in the comment section of them as well. And I don't know, somewhere through that, Dave decided he liked me, and then a couple others who were within that subscription net were like, hey, this crazy bitch in the comment section, she's all right. And then I guess you really can say that I really got noticed when Dave was like, hey, I want to do a shout-out, so here, let's do this. And I was like, I don't know what that means. I don't YouTube. But after subscribing and becoming friends with people and seeing how cool it was that they were doing things, I was like, you know what, I've wanted to do this for a while. And at the time, the medium was one of my best friends has lived several 100 miles away from me for some time now, and we were terrible at being on the phone. So it's like, hey, this would be a cool way to stay in touch. You know, we could be entertaining to each other, but also it's slightly more fun than just a phone call that I fail at anyway. And I failed at that horribly. Horribly, horribly, horribly. My entire channel is a failure. but that's my life, so why would that be different? But yeah, so I guess from making videos and who I became friends with in the comments section, it just kind of bloomed. Had I not become friends with Lone Voice Bros 975, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows where I would have found myself? I may have been gotten into macrame. What a horrible thought.
Ooh, no, that's horrible.
Yeah, what a horrible evil dimension that would be.
On that subject, actually, before I started, asked a couple of friends to see if they want to ask any questions, and Chris Norberg has just literally get back to me as we were speaking there, and it's kind of on the subject we've already been talking about. You may already have answered it actually, but he said, why does Patty think the retro gaming tubers have a rapport with her and her likewise? You probably already answered that, haven't you?
I actually don't know why you guys have embraced me at all. Like, I feel like Dave was obviously the catalyst, because without the exposure he gave me, since he's like the pulse of this group in one way or another, I wouldn't have gotten the attention. But why the hell you guys like me, I got no fucking idea. But I'm not complaining either, because I fell in love with you bastards. So I don't have to understand it as long as it works. It's fine. But I suspect some of it is, as much as I detest, and I do detest the phrase fake gamer girl, because you don't need, what, the presence of a vast deference is what differentiates between truth and fiction. But admittedly, there are those unfortunate, stupid young women on YouTube who are exactly that. They pretend to be into gaming to get views, and they aim the camera at the tits. I think the fact that I'm a female and I am genuinely geeky and I don't do any of that may have something to do with it, but yeah. I guess I don't know. And again, it doesn't matter because you guys brought me in and I'm happy.
Absolutely. And Chris sent you a lovely gift recently, didn't you? And I seen that on your video.
He
sent you first edition book.
That was crazy. That freaking yellow bastard. You can't take your eyes off him. He's always doing something weird and wonderful. But if I'm honest, I like the mask a little bit more, but that's because I'm a freak about masks, and it was super cool that it's one his daughter made, and I'm weird about stuff like that. But
yeah,
I haven't started the book yet because it's Christmas, and me sitting down to read is... But as soon as the holiday's over, I can't wait to crack into that.
So can we expect to see some scary videos with the mask?
Yep. I'm not sure exactly what yet, but you damn well bet that mofo is going to show up.
I will look forward to that and also be kind of scared at the same time.
Exactly. I was going to say, look forward to or dread.
look forward to.
Okay.
Right. So I went and opened up Facebook and closed my notes. Here we go. So you described your channel as randomness primarily shared with my friends. I think that's what you said on it. You can't argue it's pretty random, some of your stuff is random. I was going to ask you, you know, where do you get the idea for all these questions and crazy things that you ask?
They just kind of pop into my brain. I mean, it might have something to do with swimming around in chemical waste as a child. But, I mean, honestly, if I'm not supposed to swim in it, then why is it held in a vat that I've seen in all of the 90s cartoons? I mean, I wanted to become a Ninja Turtle. So what do you expect? I'm going to dump it into the toxic waste. Didn't happen. Sad panda. But instead, I get random questions and a retarded fox tattoo. So, you know, I think it almost works. It almost works. And I don't have to worry about Shredder, so it's okay.
So one of the things you do, as I say, quite often is ask random questions, invite video responses, which I've done two or three myself, I believe. But I'm going to ask you some random questions, just two or three random questions in that sort of vein. But they're Christmassy. Seeing as this is a Christmas special. Right. Would you still send a Christmas card to someone even though you've sent one 5 years in a row and never received one back?
Oh, absolutely. It's never supposed to be about... When you give a gift, and even if it's just a card, which theoretically is supposed to be a, hi, I care about you, Merry fucking Christmas, or Happy Hanukkah, whatever. It's never supposed to be about the hope of receiving something back. It's supposed to be, no, I just wanted you to know that I care about you. So, absolutely. That said, I send so few cards. Like, if I'm going to send a card, I feel like I should send a gift, too. It just doesn't... It feels empty. So... It's like, no, I can't do this. But then at the same time, that costs money. So it becomes this horrible existential crisis. Absolutely.
Right. Have you ever built a snowman and cried when it melted away?
It's possible. When I was very, very tiny, I would assume at some point. See, I was never... Like, I was always that kid who was far more content to just sit and go into my own head, which is a dangerous, bad place, and I wouldn't recommend anyone ever use it as a vacation spot. But, so when I was a kid, I feel like, and I was an only child, and I didn't really have many friends, so the art of building the snowman, as contemporary as it is in, you know, art, where it's a bunch of kids, and they get together, and yay, we're all having fun rolling balls of snow! That wasn't quite my experience, but I'm sure at some point I made one, and I'm sure I was a very sensitive child. I'm sure at one point I was very proud of it, and it melted, and I cried. Or, more than likely, a dog peed on it, and that made me sad.
Sure.
But that's the story of my life again, dogs peeing on things.
Yeah, I can relate to that with cats.
Right. Exactly. Animals are dicks. They make your life a wonderful place, but they are dicks.
I've only got one more for you because I know it's hard to think of these answers on the spot. It's, at least when you do them, we've got a chance to think about them before we do a video. These are, it's like putting you on the spot. If you had to pick one thing about Christmas that you'd like to put into room 101, what would it be?
That I'd like to put into a room?
To room 101, it's basically a place you lock something away and it never comes back.
Oh, okay. I think it would be... Oh, there's so many, though. Oh, I hate the insipid fucking pop covers of classic Christmas songs. Like, I'm not balls deep into Christmas. That's no secret. But when fucking modern pop stars, who all sound goddamn the same, start making their own covers, and like fucking Michael Bublé. I think let's just do this. We'll put Michael Bublé in a fucking closet. We'll put him somewhere far away where he's not allowed to make any noise. He can be well fed. He can be well taken care of. He's not going to die. He's not going to be tortured or waterboarded. But the fucker can't make any more noise. Because I can't stand going everywhere. Even the damn gas station will be playing his fucking music. It's like, no. I'm here for petrol. I'm not here to be assaulted in the brain and in the ears by that bastard. But, you know, that's just a quickie feeling.
Not a good choice. I can concur with that. Anyway, we better go on with the items that you're going to pick. So I think you decided in the end that you were going to go for Christmas movies, or was it just movies?
Indeed. Yes, sort of. I decided to pick, like, as I mentioned, I'm not the Christmas freak, so most of them are going to be kind of unconventional. But to me, they are still Christmas movies, and I will defend them as such. But, yeah.
This is kind of, it's weird because obviously I do Desert Island Games, which this is, apart from this episode, but Gashead Steve started up Desert Island Films a couple of months ago, so it's kind of like I'm stealing his subject, but he stole the island, so I can steal his subject.
Exactly. I was going to say, fat thief and bastard. Just because he could beat up every single one of us just by looking at us doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve. How's it going?
Right, so I have no idea what these choices are going to be, but what's your first choice?
Well, first choice is on the very short list that is my Christmas Eve traditional, if it doesn't happen, fuck life, fuck the whole season. And that is, of course, the quintessential perfect action movie, Die Hard. It is just if I find a person in the real world who doesn't like Die Hard, I know they can't be trusted and they're not going to be saved when the rapture comes. Because it's just, is there a more perfect action movie out there? Like, is there, really?
No, I would have to agree. It's one of my favorite films of all time, as well.
Right? It's just, it's excellent in every possible way. It's got enough heart, it's got enough action, but it's also got just enough dry humor. Like, one of my favorite lines is actually when Alan Rickman's on the phone, like, phoning in the demands, just, you know, coming up with whatever, and he's like, I don't remember if they were the Red Dawn, the Red Sun, and one of his goons looks at him like, what? He goes, I read about him in Time magazine. just little shit like that I love everywhere in the fucking movie, and I just love it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's one of those few, and I do mean few, like, if it's a Christmas movie, I can't watch it when it's not Christmas. But Die Hard, I can watch any time of the year. It's got to be watched at Christmas. It's so important, and I don't know why, but it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, it's not really a conventional Christmas movie. Somebody asked me recently, what's your favourite Christmas movies? And I said, I don't really watch Christmas movies, but I like Die Hard, because it's set at Christmas.
Well, exactly. And if you wanted to get technical, you could make the bullshit high school, like, book essay explanation of it's what happens in it. A single, like, just knocked down, dragged out dude who's just fighting against all odds manages to save a bunch of people. So he saves Christmas in a way. He saves all these parents. He saves all these wonderful people. And it's a fucking miracle that he made it out alive. So yay, Christmas miracles. There's Christmas stuff. Anyone who says no, boo on you.
Exactly. Yes, I think the Die Hard films have become a bit meh of late, but the first two, I even like the third one. A lot of people don't like the third one, but I like the first three.
Me too. The third is actually my absolute favorite in the Die Hard world. Part of that is due to Jeremy Irons being just gorgeous and hilarious and amazing. and just the dynamic between McClane and Samuel Jackson is just perfect. It's so perfect. But yeah, no. And Die Hard 2 does not get enough respect. 4 and 5, yeah, they could stop. They could really stop. But I will still keep watching them, so I guess I'm making the problem worse.
Yeah. I watched 5 for the first time earlier this year, and I just found it hard watch. It just wasn't Die Hard for me.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not Die Hard anymore. It's just Bruce Willis shooting things. And honestly, if they wanted to keep doing that, I enjoy the Red films, because as niche as they are, still kind of the Expendables with fewer explosions, it's fine. It's a bunch of geezers who used to be, you know, action and drama stars who are now old, but they still get to kick, you know, break shit down and kick shit up. Just do that, Bruce. It's okay. You can keep making those films. They've already dried up, and there are only 2 of them, but it's okay. Just stay away from Die Hard. Just stop it. You're ruining it. You're ruining it, man.
Yeah, and don't do any of this passing it on, because I know that in Die Hard 5, a lot of it was like your son. I hope they don't change it to the son being then just like more Die Hard starring him. I wouldn't like that.
How gross would that be? Oh my god. Like, I'm not a fan of passing the torch stuff anyway. It doesn't matter if it's a show or film, whatever, but that one, nope.
I mean, there's some instances where that would work, like, so obviously, like James Bond, but I don't think it would work for Die Hard.
Well, and with James Bond, like, it's bizarre that so many actors can play the same character and it fits, but it was never defined as being one or the other. Like, we all have our James Bond. But, yeah, that one's just such a bizarrely open universe of, yeah, sure, whatever, as long as you're cool, you can play James Bond, it's fine. Or if you're Roger Moore. But, yeah.
What was your favorite part from Die Hard?
Ooh, that's... Well, other than the one that I mentioned about the... I read about it in Time magazine. Just about any time Alan Rickman is sassy, but my absolute favorite moment, the moment that doesn't matter what I'm doing, I have to stop. Like, my pants can be on fire, and my head could be, like, well, also on fire, because presumably if my pants are on fire, the rest of me is going to be on fire pretty quick. Doesn't matter. World needs to stop so I can hear the part where McClane's beating the shit out of the big Swedish-looking dude, and he says, "I'm going to kill you! I'm going to cook you! We're going to eat you!" I just fucking love that so much. Just the vehement anger and frustration of, I'm fighting for my life and you sons of bitches, I don't want to have to be doing this, but god damn it, I'm doing it, and I know I have to basically kill you, and I'm mad about it! It's one that anytime I'm mad, I find an excuse to use in real society, which definitely goes over well every time.
Yeah. Totally. I like the...
Weird metal.
I like the part where he, whatever he is, throws a body out the window, whatever it is, and it lands in the car, and he goes, "Welcome to the party, pal," like that.
Right.
Yeah. Classic film, Die Hard. Well, so far, so good. I've always had this fear that people pick Finns and I've never heard of them, so that's a good start, at least.
I'm pretty sure you'll have heard of at least 90% of what's on this list.
Cool. Okay, what's pick number 2?
Number 2 is another Christmas mandatory viewing, and that is Bill Murray's Scrooged. And I mean, again, who doesn't love Bill Murray? Two Bill moves right in a row. Weird. But I just love that telling of, I love A Christmas Carol. I love Dickensian work in the first place. But I just love the entire idea of taking an asshole character and going, motherfucker, here's how the world works. You're going to learn today. And he does. And it turns out to be a happy ending. I'm not usually a schmaltzy happy ending kind of person. But with Scrooge, it's just so... In some ways, it's so 80s, but it's not 80s in a dated way, and I really like that aspect. But I love that it was modernized. It was a modern adaptation, but it didn't feel like it. It just felt like another telling of the story. Because you know how sometimes you'll see a modern adaptation of this, that, or whatever, and it really, the only difference is instead of, you know, it being like an ancient city that we're in, they're in a Starbucks. There's literally no difference. It doesn't feel any different. It doesn't feel creative. This did. It was great, and most of that could be attributed to Bill Murray, but honestly, huge, huge percentage of my love for that film goes to Bobcat Goldthwait. I love him as the Bob Cratchit character. I just love him so much. And granted, I've loved Bobcat Goldthwait. I had a bizarre affinity for stand-up comedians when I was a small child, which may explain the bad aspects of my personality. But I love him so much. So ridiculous. And just all the different ghosts, and just the you know, Niagara Falls, Frankie Angel. Such a tender, painful fucking moment. It's easily the most painful moment in the whole movie. And yet it's still funny. It's like, I just don't understand why. Why? Why are you such a great film, Scrooge?
Yeah. This was 1988, so almost 30 years ago. Wow.
Oof.
Bobcat.
I was born in 87. Thanks, John.
I was born in 76.
Okay. Well, good. Haha.
See, I'm actually old enough to have watched this when it first came out. That's how old I am.
It's true. Without an adult.
I thought when you mentioned Bill Murray there, you were going to say Groundhog Day.
Nah, that's a good any other time of the year. And yeah. I guess, honest to God, as much as Ghostbusters 2 isn't really that good of a film. Like, I enjoy it, but I think I enjoy it because I was a kid when I fell for it. And I think had I watched it as an adult, I would have had a different impression. That's, honest to God, my New Year's Eve watching. But, nah, if Christmas comes and goes without Scrooged, it wasn't Christmas at all.
Not Christmas, yeah.
It just wasn't Christmas. And I absolutely love the ending. And again, I'm not the schmaltzy happy ending kind of person, but I love the sing-along at the end where Bill Murray's singing to the audience in his big goofy top hat, and he's just being Bill Murray. He's basically being like a better version of his lounge singer act from SNL, but it's still just good. And I love the adaptation of that song. And it was marvelous. Although Carole King is also one of the best parts of that. The bitch hit me with a toaster. She's just wonderful. If I can live my life being anything close to her interpretation of Christmas Present, I'm doing all right, I think. And absolutely. Then he used to hit people with toasters. Good.
And have you seen Bill Murray's latest film that came out recently? Well, it was out recently.
No, I wanted to so bad. St. Vincent? I wanted to so bad. I had plans to go see it with a friend, and then that friend moved away because he's an idiot. And I just kind of ran out of time. And a lot of the other people in my life just couldn't be bothered to go see a Bill Murray film. And I don't understand that logic. But especially, it's so bizarre because I was watching, I don't even remember what he was on, but he was talking about, oh man, I lived my entire career without doing anything Oscar-worthy, and now I've more or less ruined my career by doing something Oscar-worthy. Phil, you silly. Everything you do is Oscar-worthy, even meatballs.
Absolutely. What was that? The last Bill Murray film I seen, and I can't even remember it, is that one with Scarlett Johansson in it? What was that again?
Lost in Translation?
That's the one. That's the last Bill Murray film that I remember watching. I've rewatched Ghostbusters recently, but I mean the last film of his that he made that I've seen. That's a good film.
Yeah, that one's a surprisingly gorgeous film. And I don't know if it's because you walk into it with knowing Sofia Coppola is a terrible actress and you go, oh good, this directing can't possibly go anywhere well. But it actually goes everywhere it should and doesn't go too far and doesn't go far enough, but it works that way. And I don't know, it's a bizarre film. The only complaint I have is the fucking volume on my DVD, at least. It's like the dialogue and audio way down here. And then the music's up here! God damn it! If you're going to do this, don't have the fucking characters whisper half the time. Jesus Christ. But,
yeah. I didn't even notice.
One of the more recent ones in between Lost in Translation and St. Vincent is one called Monuments Men. And I can see why critics didn't like it that much, because it does go a little quickly and it doesn't get as heavy. It's about these real men during World War II who genuinely, these are real people who tried to salvage, art historical parts of our human culture and save them from the Nazis, who I think we can all agree were a bunch of fucking assholes. And the film's directed by and starring George Clooney, but he basically just called all his friends and said, hey, you want to be in this movie? Because I think it'll be fun, and it's great. And Bill Murray is paired against, what the hell is his name? Balaban. I'm going to say his name's John Balaban, but I'm pretty sure I'm wrong there. But they're fucking, it's so funny. It's very dry in parts. It's also very respectful. And that's really important for any war drama of any kind. And it's not a comedy. It's got funny parts, but it's also got heavy-duty drama parts. And Bill Murray's got one of the more subtle ones, and it's just like, wow, that's... People forget that Bill Murray's... There's a reason he's a legend. He's not just Peter Venkman. Granted, he is always Peter Venkman, but there's more to that guy. Yeah. And it's, but yeah, that one's brilliant. So I would highly recommend you Netflix that shit as soon as you get a chance.
Cool. I do have a Netflix account, so I will check that out. Yeah. Sure. So, Bill Murray's now 64 years old.
Wow. That's not okay. That means he's getting close to the dangerous age.
Yeah. He's still younger than my dad, fair enough.
Although my dad's it's possible. I was just about to say, well, then we know your dad isn't Bill Murray, so sad panda.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll move on to pick number three.
Number three is another on the unconventional list. It's called A Long Kiss Goodnight, and it stars Gina Davis and Samuel Jackson and Brian Cox, and it is... another one of those fuck shit up kind of action flicks. This one, I've not met many people who've seen it, and if they did, they did damn well didn't see it in the theaters. It was, I don't even know, it might have even been a straight to DVD release. It may not have had a theatrical release, but it's Gina Davis is a spy who was like the most kick-ass spy in the world, but she got shot in the back of the head at one point, and now when we are introduced to her, her name had been Charlie. Now she's Sam. And Samantha is a school teacher who has amnesia. And she's trying to just live a happy life, not knowing who she is, what she is, etc. Samuel L. Jackson is this skeevy private detective who Samantha has hired to figure out who the hell she is. And he's just a con artist and a half. But she... gets into an accident, and all of a sudden her memories start to come back. But unfortunately, the bad guys who were after her in the first place, because she was a balls-deep spy into heavy-duty domestic terrorist attacks here in America, not to say that she's a good guy, she just works for the good guys, because this bitch will kill you as hard as she can and as messily as she can. She is intense. And I've always loved Gina Davis. This movie's a good Gina Davis movie. This movie was one of the first times I think she ever actually got to flex her acting muscles. And it almost erases Speechless from existence. Because what a fucking terrible piece of shit movie that is. Ugh. Both her and Michael Keaton. How dare you make this movie? But anyway, back to Long Kiss Goodnight. This movie is messy and violent. And she's aggressive and hot and funny. And like... It is dark as hell. The main bad guy, when we're introduced to him, he's got a dude hanging from a meat hook who he's trying to pump from information out of, and he gets a phone call from one of his goons who saw Gina Davis as her amnesia self on TV playing Santa Claus in a small town parade, and that messed him up real bad. But he calls and he says, oh, you know, I saw something on TV that, you know, really fucked me up, it really pissed me off, it really bothered me, something along those lines. And the bad guy goes, yeah, so did I. It's called Baywatch Nights. Yeah. And so he's really dry and sarcastic, and then the guy that is hanging on the meat hook after the bad guy gets off the phone, he's like, okay, so basically, you know, I'm going to kill you, right? And the guy's begging for his life. He's saying, please, just don't use the knife, man. Just use the gun. Just please, please, please. He's like, it's okay. I'm not going to use the gun. And then he guts him like a fish. I'm not going to use the knife. And then he guts him like a fish. And it's like, you are a bastard and a half, aren't you? And it's Samuel L. Jackson's got some really great lines in it. And the her memories don't come back all at once. She just gets little flashes, and then every flash she gets, there's more and more people after her, so she and Samuel Jackson get together after the guy who saw her on TV breaks out of prison and comes to her house to kill her, and she kills him really hard. I had never thought of using a milk jug as a weapon against a human being before, but now I know. And so she goes on this pilgrimage to find herself, and she does, unfortunately, as scary as it ends up being for her. But Samuel Jackson just gets the shit kicked out of him right left and sideways, but he gets so many funny things to say. But it all takes place during Christmas time. And at some point, like, her daughter gets kidnapped, and it's a difficult situation because she had the daughter after she had amnesia, so she keeps trying to pretend that she doesn't care about the daughter. But, oh no, Gina Davis, you do care about your daughter. It's okay. You could be a ruthless assassin and be a mommy. It's okay. It's an insane film that's just bloody and messy and hilarious and just vicious, and I just love every part of it. And it's very funny in a lot of really weird ways sometimes, but highly recommend it.
Yeah. You've brought back a lot of memories of this film for me, because I have watched it, but it's been many years since I watched it. I mean, I think I watched it when it came on to Sky Movies over here, which would be about 2 years after it came out, so it would have been 1998, so I probably have not seen this film since the late 90s.
Get on that, dude.
Yeah, I watched it again. I remember watching it and really enjoying it, because I'm a big Samuel Jackson fan anyway.
Right? And I can't even really put my finger down on what specifically it is about it, because I don't just go into something because it's violent, or because it's got dry humor, or because of the cast, usually. But this film, it just seems to... I think when I first saw it, I want to say I was like maybe 10 or 11, which is saying something, but I don't know if it just surprised me and it caught my interest so heavily, and I went, okay, I'm in. Let's see where this rabbit hole goes or what, but I'm just nuts about it. I love it. It's not on the Christmas Eve viewing list, but it's definitely during the Christmas time. It's usually what I watch when I wrap presents, truth be told. So anyone who gets a lot of blood on their presents, you know why.
Yes, watch out for that, people. Blood on your presents. You know why it happened.
I have scissors. I mean, shit's just going to get real quick. It's realistic.
Yeah. It's obviously one of the, or probably the most famous, arguably the most famous film would have been the Thelma and Louise film.
Right.
A classic chick flick, isn't it?
Kind of, yeah. Let's murder people and then go on a road trip.
Yeah, but she was in Beetlejuice as well.
Oh, I love Beetlejuice. I do not like these talks of the sequel at all. Mm. I hate the idea of it. But then again, they're also making Labyrinth 2, so it's like, let's just destroy all of these classic films with sequels. Why not? Why the fuck not?
Yeah. Just looking at a picture of Gina Davis on her Wikipedia page, and she's 58-year-old. This picture is from last year. Still looking good for a 58-year-old.
She's great. I mean, she's got such an eclectic look, and she doesn't look, you know, like the young, goofy, not actually a vampire, but thinks she's a vampire from Transylvania 65,000. But she's beautiful. She's a little demigoddess, and I love her. And I love that she's also very intelligent, and she can hold her own. She's never going to win an Oscar, but that's okay, because that's not why she's in it. So good for her.
Absolutely. And a lot of films that I watch in particular are not Oscar-winning films. A lot of films are, I like, you know, silly stuff. Like,
to be perfectly honest, the Oscars serve their purpose, but I personally consider them to be a big crock of shit. They're usually political. They're usually just pretentious elitists pulling shenanigans, and I do not think Jennifer Lawrence is a good enough actress to have gotten an Oscar, but the fact that she's young and very popular and very fresh, that definitely has nothing to do with her Oscar. Definitely not. It's not because she's new and young and the Oscars were looking for someone to become a new face for them. Definitely not. So if a film wins an Oscar, it's like, all right, kudos, because I do, you know, want to be respectful of the achievement that was obtained by all the people who were involved in the film. It was their baby. It was their thing. And that, even if I hated them, if I made a film and it won an Oscar, I'd still be like, all right, go, good me, pat on the back. But yeah, at the same time, it's like I hate watching them. And I'm not more inclined to buy something because it was nominated for an Academy Award. Like, look at shit.
Yeah. If anything, it would put me off buying it because I think Oscar films are just usually something really serious. And I like films that make me laugh.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing that pisses me off because comedy is not considered to be one of the genres that they look at typically. And that's horseshit because you can be a method actor and play a heroin addict or a Satan worshiper or a down on his luck cop who killed a kid. You know, whatever dark, holy shit, heavy thought you have to do, you can do that in a good day, bad day, whatever. Granted, if you're a method actor, you're probably going to make every day a bad day until you're off the set. But with comedy, you can't show, like, your parents could have just died and you are on the job still. You still have to hide that pain and make people laugh. And you can't do it by making it look like it's funny. You know, the key to comedy is to tell it like it's not a joke at all. Like, it's just real.
Yeah.
And so for the actors and actresses who can portray that, who can be funny in spite of whatever emotional turmoil is going on at that exact moment, is fantastic and brilliant. And to me, it deserves far more credit sometimes than the dramatic actors need to necessarily receive. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not being an actor. I have no right to tell who's the good and who's the bad. But for the actors who I really feel like comedic actors get gypped hardcore by the elitist group that is the Academy board members because, yeah, they deserve... I'm not saying Borat should have ever fucking been nominated for an Oscar or anything, but it's worth considering. Bring on the new era of welcoming all genres. Maybe not all genres, because as much as it would be great if Bruce Campbell won an Oscar, I don't think the world could handle it. Pretty sure we'd rip a hole in time and space if that happened.
Yeah. That's a very good point well made. I think one of the best transformations I've seen from a kind of serious actor, if you like, to a comedy actor was Joe Pesci. You know, he's in all these serious gangster films, and then all of a sudden he's a wee funny guy in Lethal Weapon too.
Absolutely. Like, he honestly, I was actually having a conversation with my mom about the fact that spoilers, Lethal Weapon doesn't feature on this list, and I don't understand why, because I don't remember if it's one or two, but one of them, you know, it does take place during Christmas, and I saw that at the same age, and it's almost, it feels like it should appeal more to a little me, because Mel Gibson's basically just doing Three Stooges jokes right, left, and sideways throughout the entire film, so he's goofier, he's sillier, and Danny Glover's just, you know, getting too old for this shit, but then there's Joe Pesci, who's just hilarious, and like you said, he did do a perfect transition from this fucker will kill you to... No, this fucker's hilarious. It's okay.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why Die Hard will always sit on this high pedestal of perfection and Lethal Weapon just never quite made the cut. Like, I love it, but I don't know. It's just something about it. It's just not there.
It's the first one that's set at Christmas, because I remember it started the film. It's that Jingle Bell Rocks song at the start of it.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm the same with Lethal Weapon. I mean, when I was on Steve's Desert Island Films, I picked Die Hard, and then I picked Lethal Weapon 2, second one. Because I particularly like that scene in Lethal Weapon 2 where he's on the toilet and there's a bomb in the toilet.
It's such a bizarre... I think that one's so funny because it's one of those that I guess you never really thought of. That was definitely a way a terrorist could try to get a hold of you. That's a terrible assassination attempt right there. Because what do you do? What the hell do you do?
Oh, that was so funny. They played that part. I thought, you know, Mel Gibson's kind of the funnier one in that, but I think Danny Glover plays a funny part in that.
He does. Like, honestly, the straight man in any comedy duo does not get enough appreciation, because without the straight man, the goofy, off-the-wall one can't really do anything. And Danny Glover's just so... Life is just kicking him in the balls so much, so often, and he just keeps trying, and he's so funny. He just I love him.
Yeah.
I wish we saw more Danny Glover these days, but
yeah.
I don't know how old he is, but I'm assuming he's getting up there.
He's going to be in his 70s anyway, I would think.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, he would have been, what, in his 50s when Lethal Weapon came out?
So he's literally too old for this shit now.
Yeah, this, of course, in the fourth one as well, he's, at the start of the film, he's running about in his boxer shorts or something, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. I saw the fourth one in theaters, and that it was half disappointing because it wasn't really that good. But at the same time, I was like, it got so intense with Jet Li there almost killing Mel Gibson at one point. I was like, this is weird. I don't know how to feel about this. I love Jet Li, but this is weird. But, yeah, I don't know. That boxer scene and pretending he's a chicken thing was just so funny. It's so such an asshole move. Just so wonderful. Distract him.
Oh, well, you didn't pick Lethal Weapon, but at least it's still got an honorable mention.
Sure. It deserves one.
I think I always lose count. I think we're on to number four.
Let's go then to number four, which is this. Now we're back to the Christmas Eve mandatory viewing, and that is A Muppet Christmas Carol. And again, A Christmas Carol story shows up on here. I fucking love this film. I would assume most anyone who has does, unless you have like some morbid terror of the Muppets, which I understand, I guess, because
I used to have.
They're not real.
When I was a kid, I used to be scared of Miss Piggy.
Oh, yeah? Well, she's kind of a bitch, so if you're going to pick one to be afraid of, that's definitely a good one. She and Sweetums are kind of intense, but yeah, I just, it's just so perfect, although I don't understand why Disney has. And they did it in PAL DVDs as well as North American releases. They cut out the really painful Destroy Your Life song, the duet between Michael Caine and the young lady who was playing his, oh fuck, what was her name? I want to say her name was Kate, but the Belle. They cut out Belle's song where she's basically explaining that I loved you, but this isn't working. Because you're never going to have enough money for us to be happy, and I don't need money to be happy. That song has been cut out completely. You get the intro set up of them sitting on the bench, and then you cut to the end where she kind of looks over her shoulder and walks away, and then there's Gizmo and Rizzo. Gizmo. Gonzo, rather, and Rizzo. Gizmo had a cameo. Nobody knew. He played Miss Piggy. It was great. But it cuts to them crying and Michael Caine crying, and if I were a kid who had never seen the original, I would be beyond confused by this. Yeah. Why is everybody crying? What happened? Nothing actually happened. But I saw that in theaters, and oh my god, I'm so glad my mom took me to see that in the theater. Normally, it's not that big a deal to get the theater experience versus the home viewing experience. There's not that much difference for me. There's just the absence of complete and utter assholes who are on their phones and kicking my chair, basically. But, oh my god, that film in the theater around Christmas was just brilliant. It was just wonderful.
Yeah, I think that's very bizarre that they would cut that song out. There's not really any reasonable reason for that.
Yeah, I can only assume it's because it really does make you cry. But at the same time, hello, you're Disney. Literally, you've made an entire career off of making children cry. Every film before 1973 was destined to hurt you. So I don't quite understand this, but times are different. We're in the Fisher-Price mold, everything, so it's not sharp and pointy and no emotions and nothing like that's generations, so who knows. But can we just take a moment to acknowledge how perfect Michael Caine is in every way, in general, but in this film? Oh, my God. Yes. And his song at the end, once he's seen the light and he's figured it out, perfect. I just love it. You don't for a second question that, he's not an actor hanging around with a bunch of sock puppets. He's honest to God, Ebenezer Scrooge. He's really a man who lived his life in this sullen wasteland of emotions and locked himself away in his heart, and now he's finally seen the light, and it's a Christmas miracle and all this wonderful stuff. He wants to do all these wonderful things and make all these wonderful people happy. He's just great. I just love it.
Yeah. Well, if Danny Glover is old, then Michael Caine must be even older.
That's putting it lightly. Yeah, he's definitely beyond grandpa age at this point. And that scares me because he's officially at the age of, you just never know if next year he's going to be in that Oscar tribute special when they do it to Everybody Died this year. That's going to be a bad day. Well, that said, Mel Brooks, who is an idol of mine, is also really far up there, and so it's starting to get to be dangerous territory.
Mel Brooks, as in Blazing Saddles, that guy. Mel Brooks.
Well, he's getting up there. I'm scared, John.
Oh, don't be scared. You'll be
okay.
Yeah, I love Mel Brooks. Have you ever heard the? You would have, I'm sure, a band called Madness.
Yeah.
They done a song called Michael Caine.
Oh really?
It's actually called My Name Is Michael Caine. You should look it up on look it up on Spotify. I'm not making
I
up. Shall.
I trust you. I mean, shit. This is a Rob Bruce Campbell earlier. A couple of years ago, I had made a CD that I wanted to make it just a geeky, nerdy mish of just things. And I found somebody had done a really hilarious rap based off of Bruce Campbell in Evil Dead. And it's hilarious. Like, I don't understand. And it's the name of the song is I'm Bruce Campbell. And people are creative, aren't they? They're just so silly.
Yes, there's some amount of creative fins out on YouTube. I love just finding random fins on YouTube.
Right? I mean, yeah. If YouTube serves any purpose, yeah. It is to enlighten you to the just random shit people are capable of doing that isn't parkour kitten videos.
I love mashup videos. For example, there's an ACDC versus Ray Parker Jr. And Thunderbusters. Brilliant.
That's awesome. Have you seen the one of the best mashups that's out there is the Pink Floyd, Another Brick in the Wall, and the Bee Gees, Staying Alive.
Oh,
it works. It's so funny, and it works, and I don't understand.
That's
so good, whoever made it.
Yeah,
it's so good. And go ahead.
They find all these weird combinations of songs, but as you say, they work.
Yeah, it takes some kind of genius, and you sit there and go, well, why the fuck couldn't I think of that? Damn it. I could be sitting here. I guess none of these people are actually famous for having done this, but still, like, what did I do today? I made a gummy bear talk. That's what I did. Oh, shit.
Oh, well. Yeah, I would love to have the time to do it. I mean, that must take a long time to put those fins together as well.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. So maybe having a life is our crutch here. That's our handicap.
Yeah. I think the ultimate one, though, that I've seen in this weird as it sounds actually works, is Slipknot versus Justin Bieber.
Oh my god!
Honestly.
Oh, that sounds... Well, that would be half worth hearing. Because Slipknot's always good for a good moment or two. But I don't know that it'd be worth it to hear anything of Justin Bieber. I've gone through entire Justin Bieber era with not having ever once heard one of his songs, or if I did, I damn well didn't know it. But I'm going to try to keep this winning streak going. Go the distance, man.
Well, I tried as well, but unfortunately I was looking up Slipknot just in general, and that came up, and my curiosity got the better of me.
Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah.
Although at least it's Slipknot. I mean, you've at least got, it's not as bad as it could have been. You've got that concentrated evil, and then you've got Slipknot to sort of balance it out, and that spoonful of sugar that makes the medicine go down kind of thing. It's okay.
Okay, before we move on to the next one, seeing as we're talking about Muppets, who is your favorite Muppet?
When I was a kid, it was always Kermit, but honestly, I hate the new Muppets. I hate them with passion, and it's not their fault that they are this way, but they are. But that said, I love Pepe the King Prawn. I have no idea why, but he's the only new Muppet that I like. But the other favorite has always been the Swedish Chef.
Oh, yeah.
Like, to a point where several years ago, I had a job in a bakery for a whopping 2 minutes, and my former roommate, we had decided it was inevitable that I was going to quit. We just didn't know when or how long it was going to take me to just crack. And we had decided, because there's a scene in, I had an old VHS that was basically like Muppet Moments. In fact, I may even know what it's called. Good memory, Patty. And one of the Swedish Chef scenes was he bakes a cake, and then part of the recipe is the cake and smoosher, and he takes this big bat and goes, and he smashes the cake. And we decided that if I was going to quit, this is exactly what's going to have to happen. I'm going to dress like the Swedish Chef, and I'm going to make a cake, and I'm going to bring a baseball bat, and I'm going to use the cake and smoosher. And fortunately, the job just wasn't there anymore, like within a day. So I didn't get a chance to do the cake and smoosher. But the day is young. Yeah. There's always tomorrow. There's always an opportunity to fuck shit up.
Yeah.
And I've got the eyebrows for it too, so it's okay.
Safe eyebrows.
What about you? Who's your favorite? Who's your favorite Muppet?
Ooh, Animal.
Yeah.
One
of my favorite Animal moments is in the Muppet Show itself. I don't remember who the host was now, but one of the sub stories that was going on was Animal kept being Animal, and he kept getting in Kermit's way, and he's like, "Oh, would you just find him a hobby?" And they finally find him a hobby, and Lloyd's like, "Yeah, man, he's taking up bowling." And Kermit's like, "Oh, well, that's really good." And, "Yeah, but the only problem is Animal bowls overhand," and all of a sudden, so stupid. But I love it so much.
Yeah,
I
like. I just like that one. You know, where they're doing that Banana Nam song, and they start off in the studio, and then the guy that's, I can't remember the Muppet that does it, but he gets his coat on, and then he goes away down the street, and then he phones up, and he goes Banana Nam. And I liked a lot of the stuff that came out in the '90s, the Muppets Tonight.
Yeah, they weren't too bad. Like when Muppets Tonight came back, and like I remember Mark Hamill was on, and it was okay then. That was right about the time of like, but I guess it was still during Muppet Christmas Carol time when they were still good in the '90s. And like Muppet Treasure Island does not get enough respect. It may not be good, but fuck you. There's Tim Curry and there's Muppets. Who cares? But. Yeah, I don't know what happened, though. I don't know when the transition happened when all of a sudden they started just being awful, but they did, and I miss the 90s Muppets. I miss the 70s Muppets more, but I miss the 90s Muppets.
Yeah. Seymour and Pippi were two of a kind. That was one of my favorite songs.
Yeah.
They did that
Beach Boys cover, didn't they?
Yeah.
They did Kokomo. Why, we don't know.
There's a lot of classic ones from the 90s, like you used to have this guy, it's like a Johnny something, he was a sinner, and he was getting his fortune told, and the Muppets like, "Beware of falling pianos," and he goes, "That's a stupid fortune," and a piano fell on his head. Yeah, Muppets, love them. What about Muppet Babies? I like the Muppet Babies, didn't like that.
Oh, God, Muppet Babies. Yeah. Jesus Christ. I understand why they exist, but I'm glad that they don't in my life anymore.
Yeah. It used to be a Saturday staple of my Saturday morning television as a kid.
Oh, yeah. They used to be rerun on, I don't remember, we didn't have cable for a long time, so one of the major networks used to run it, like, after school. Or maybe it was during school hours, because I think I was sick whenever I was watching them, so maybe that's why I have such bad memories, because if I had a fever and I was watching Muppet Babies, I can only imagine all sorts of bad hallucinations.
Right, okay, well, before I get to bad memories, we'll move on to game number five. Game number five? I'm too used to doing this. Film number five.
Number five on the list is back in the unconventional category, and that would be Gremlins. And again, anyone who says that that's not a Christmas movie, you're wrong. You're just wrong. And it's okay that you're wrong, but you can fix it. Because fucking, other than Hoyt Axton's little pseudo-film noir introduction when he gets fucking Gizmo, the film opens on a damn Christmas song. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I just think it's genius. I love that it is technically a horror film, and I can see where people sit and go, oh, no, it's not a horror film. Yeah, it fucking is. It does a brilliant job of being a silly homage to the, like, B-horror films that were monster flicks from the days of yore. And it's just brilliant, and it's so funny in little goofy-ass ways. And Corey Feldman dressed as a little Christmas tree. It's just so adorable. But, yeah, I just love it. I just love it. And honestly, there's one scene in the film that actually, like, every time, it does exactly what a horror film is supposed to do, and it makes my heart really tight, and I go, oh, I like it! And that's when Stripe is in the Christmas tree, and his eyes are, there's all the lights, but yeah. You're like, oh, shit, those are eyes. Oh, shit, lady! Billy's mom, run!
Get away!
But, yeah. But I love it. And honestly, the part where the decoy in the stocking, where the toy robot is in the stocking and it's moving,
oh,
and so she
yeah.
gets to stab it. That's a pretty good suspenseful moment too. Of God damn it! Yeah. But yeah, I love them. So I actually just watched it a couple nights ago, and I love. Oh, what was her name? Phoebe Cates? Is that her name? The actress, who plays Billy's girlfriend.
Oh, let me just check. Well, I'm checking that. I was going to say one of my favourite scenes was when the Gremlins are in the bar, they're all getting drunk and all the rest of it, and like, there's only a little coat on and it flashes the barman. Like, oh, it's brilliant. Gremlins, it was good.
I actually get really, really thirsty for beer in that scene. Like, most of the time, if there's a bar scene in a film, it doesn't actually make me want beer for some ungodly reason. That scene, every time, is like, shit, I need beer.
Maybe
Gremlins, they're dangerous. It's not in the ways you thought.
Maybe you secretly long to be a gremlin, and that's why you want beer, so you can be like the gremlins.
Maybe. I actually did want to be a gremlin for a while, but mostly because of the new batch, the second one, which is hilarious. Yeah. I feel like maybe I saw that one before I saw the original Gremlins, because it was my favorite movie when I was very teeny tiny, and I wanted so badly to be a gremlin for so long. It was ridiculous. And here I am. I'm short, I'm loud, I'm obnoxious, and I don't always play by the rules. I think I made it. And sometimes my skin is flaky. So there we go.
Yeah, I think the Gremlins 2 took it to a whole new level when some of them started talking and things like that. Brilliant. Who did you say that actress was?
Wasn't it like Phoebe Cates or something?
Yeah, Phoebe Cates. You're spot on, yeah.
I win!
Yes.
Give me a cookie.
Have a cookie.
But yeah, no, and just that, the really bizarre fucking moment where she's going off about how her dad died while trying to play Santa Claus and he gets stuck in the chimney. It's just one of those moments where you're like, it's really sad, but I feel like I need to laugh, but I don't know why. It's just weird. But I love in the new batch when they make fun of that by all of a sudden she's got this bad, you know, memory of, I don't remember if it was Lincoln's birthday or President's Day, was one of those. And they just totally take the piss. It's like, yes, good job. You know what you did.
That's the thing about film. There's a lot of films like this, but this film in particular, the stars in this film, it's going to went into obscurity after this.
Yeah.
All the only really big thing they've done is this Gremlins and Gremlins 2.
Yeah, other than Judge Reinhardt, or whatever his name actually is, Judge something or another, and he's kind of obscure too. If he didn't have Beverly Hills Cops movies, I think he would have disappeared long, long before he did. But yeah, nobody else really got a chance to go anywhere. And Hoyt Axton was kind of on the end of his career at that point. I think this was just the final chapter. But although one of the moments, just all the little subtleties in the film, I absolutely adore. And one of my favorite little teeny tiny moments is when Billy's dad is calling from the convention. He's talking to Billy's mom, and he's sitting in that weird little phone booth thing, and he's talking about, wow, you know, everybody's pretty advanced here, a little bit more so than I thought, and behind him is the fucking time machine from the movie, The Time Machine, and then it cuts back to her on her end, and then it cuts back to Hoyt, and the time machine's gone, and everybody's trying to, acting like they're looking for something. It's like, subtle, I like it. Sneaky Spielberg, what are you doing?
Sneaky.
Sneaky Spielberg.
Don't think we don't notice.
Yeah, we knew what you were doing.
Yeah. Right, so I think we're at halfway point. It's 10 you're picking, isn't it?
Is this time for intermission? We all get up and go to
the bathroom? It's time for, well, if you want to, if you feel free to have a break, but I was going to say it was time for a surprise, two questions from Dave, also known as Infected Plunge.
Uh-oh. Da-da-da.
Yeah. So he's got a sensible question and a silly question. Which one would you...
No, he does not. Don't even. He does not have sensible questions. The man does not have sensible anything.
It's actually semi-sensible.
Do like the word semi. dealer's choice. Throw them at me, however you choose.
Right. Okay, the sensible one first then. What's your favourite episode of Farscape?
I think Erin's funeral. The one where she sacrifices herself, sort of. I don't even remember what all was going on, but when Erin dies, I remember that affected me really badly the first time I saw it. And even though, spoilers, she's not dead. But, oh, it's just such a beautiful episode, and it really, I feel like it's been a long time since I've seen that one. I feel like it's a turning point in her character, where up to this point we've known she's strong and she's very conflicted with her peacekeeper background and the fact that she's not supposed to be emotional, even though she's one of the few, you know, children among the peacekeepers who was born of love and not just breeding, which is creepy, but okay. And she just finally does this selfless act, and it's like, oh, okay, Erin, you're good. It's good. There's hope for you. Oh, and now you're dead. Great. Right after we're all in love with you. Now, bear in mind, again, I don't actually even remember what happened, so I may have that completely and utterly wrong, because the first time I saw it, Farscape was on, I want to say, in like it was the end of the 90s. I want to say maybe that episode was 97, so that would have made me 10 years old.
Right.
So, yeah, there's a whole lot of room for me to not know what I'm talking about, which is normal.
Yeah. Well, I can only assume that you're factually correct in everything, because I've never seen it.
Yeah. Well, Dave will call me out if not.
So. Sure he will. Yeah, I'm sure he will. Right, and a silly question. Be prepared. Have you ever pooed yourself and felt good about it?
Well, I'm sure when I was a small child, like actually going through potty changing, I'm pretty sure. See, that's probably the thing about life that's so bizarre is we come out, nobody asked us if we wanted to be here, and then they tape bags to us, and we don't understand what's going on. We know we feel bad, and then all of a sudden we feel good, and yet we're still taped to what this waste is that just came out of us. And it's such a bizarre concept, even though there's not really a way to... Science isn't with us yet where we can fix this, but then it's really scary that we revert back to that age, and except now we have that self-awareness of, no, I don't want this. I don't want this at all, and that's kind of grim. But yeah, I'm fairly certain that when I was a teeny tiny baby, I was damn proud of taking a shit, and technically I'm pooing myself because it's taped to my body, so I'm sure I was very proud of myself on many occasions at that. In fact, I might have even done it at spite at some point. I don't know.
Well, you just reminded me of one time I pooed myself when I was about 4 or 5, and this is not going to paint my dad in a good light, but back then you were disciplined, you know, that's how you were disciplined, but anyway, I pooed myself and my dad hit me, but the joke was on him because, you know, when he hit me in the bum, he'd poo his hand.
There you go, daddy boy.
Yeah.
Joke's on you, man.
Yeah. Maybe you'll think twice about striking children.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Child abuse is not okay. And if the only deterrent you need is that you might get poo on your hands, that's a good deterrent.
Yes. Yeah, that was very random. Thanks to Dave for those questions, especially as I actually asked them last minute. But that's a good thing about Dave. He can just pull these questions out of his head at a moment's notice.
Yeah, I think we're from neighboring planets of I don't know where the fuck it is, but it's nowhere you ever want to be. It's fucking wacky.
And thanks to Chris as well for the question earlier on. But I don't know, when I was preparing for the show before we come on, I thought, oh, it might be interesting to get a couple of guys to see if they wanted to ask yourself any questions. So thanks to those guys.
Keep firing away to anyone who wants to.
I might start randomly doing that in future episodes, just get questions from fellow YouTubers. Because why should I do all the work?
Exactly! Yeah. Damn it, you work so hard for the public. Let the public do some of the work once in a while.
Yes.
Fuckers.
Okay, so after that short interlude, we move on to game number 6. Is it 6? Can't remember. Or is it 5?
I believe so. And 6 is... the final Christmas Carol entry for me, and that is the George C. Scott version of A Christmas Carol, and with the Equalizer playing The Ghost of Christmas Present. I fucking love that one. I mean, that one, whereas, you know, the Muppet Christmas Carol could only go so far because it's Muppets, and Scrooge went far, but it was still technically trying to be a comedy. This one is not a comedy at all. This one is the true blue... I'm going to make you realize exactly what's wrong with your lifestyle any way that I can, with as many painful images as possible. And the most haunting image out of that entire, you know, film, which is just so, so well done, is when Ghost of Christmas Present opens his robe, which that's a good start, isn't it? When this giant man opens his robe, and the two small children who are clearly malnourished and who are dying of starvation, when he's showing them to Ebenezer and going, ah, see, you know, this is what the world is. This is what your world is. This is what you do, while they're in the gutter and they just watch the you know, father talk about how he wanted to go to some, like, work thing. And the wife said, absolutely not. We are here together. If we're going to die, we're going to die together. Because we're going to die anyway, so no. It's just very intense. It's beautifully done. And young Roger Rees as the nephew is adorable. He's got this stupid bro and everything. This is so cute. I love Roger Rees. But, yeah, I love that one. And I don't know what it is about the actual story of A Christmas Carol that is so appealing to me, but it just always has been. It's been the only Christmas story that actually is, like, mandatory for me, as is evident by the fact that 3 of the fucking Christmas Eve, because this is on the Christmas Eve list too, 3 of them are the same fucking story, but I gotta watch every one of them. It's just so important, and I don't know why.
You must be... hell of a busy on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, I'm usually done with work around 1, so it's just throw the DVDs in, and it used to be just pick out on junk food, but, you know, this year, not so much, but, because, you know, I'm getting older, and the stuff doesn't go away as quickly as it used to. But yeah, it's pretty much just that DVD, it just has fucking Dickensian shit going all night long. The only reprieve it seems to get is, is Die Hard. But, yeah, and it's, I don't know. I think it's the idea behind, like, I'm not a religious person, but I don't begrudge anyone who is or anything like that. To me, it's Christmas historically, spoilers, and sorry to anyone who's not gonna like the reality of it, but Christmas was stolen from the pagans by the Christians as a recruitment tactic. Whether or not that shouldn't diminish anybody's belief in this, that, or whatever, because you're not believing for the historical accuracy, you're believing because it's supposed to be what provides you with hope and a moral compass if you really need it and stuff like that. That's the purpose it should serve. Mm-hmm. But that said, subsequently, because I'm not religious, Christmas doesn't have to be a religious thing. I hate the people who are like, oh, the war on Christmas, and get rid of Santa Claus because it's not about Santa Claus. Fuck you, Christmas... That's all it is. That's what Christmas is to me. And learning how to appreciate what you've got, even if you can only do it for a day, which is horseshit, you should be able to do it every day. But for some people, that's just how it is. So, and to me, Christmas Carol does a very good job of reminding you what it means to be a human and the fact that we're all in this together. And it's important to think about others and welcome others into your heart any way you can. And Christmas Carol still, to me, is one of the most quintessential stories that actually does do that.
Yeah. I think I commented on one of your videos about not believing in, not being religious, but liking Christmas and feeling like a hypocrite, didn't I? I think you gave me a row.
Yeah, you did. But yeah, and you absolutely shouldn't, because it's not, you know, it's no more a Christian holiday than it is a, you know, Jewish holiday, Muslim holiday. You know, it's a holiday of people, and it should be a holiday of peace. And if you really need a main character to focus on, fine, have at it. You know, it, worship whatever you want to worship as merrily as you want to. It's not what you believe, it's how you believe and what you do with that belief that will determine who you are, basically, and determine whether or not I hate you. Because if you use your belief to hurt other people, well, fuck you. Guess what? But, yeah, no, Christmas is just as much for you and I as it is for anybody else, John.
Yeah. I believe in the Church of Rock and Roll. That's what I believe in.
Exactly.
Yeah. I just believe, you know, life should be about having fun and enjoying it while you're here. That's all. That's my outlook.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we have no proof of anything that exists beyond, and you could make the argument that we don't actually have substantial enough proof that to really know for sure that we are alive, that any of this is real. We think it's real, and we think we're here, so we might as well make the most of it.
Ooh, this just got deep.
It sure did. But I'm about as deep as a mud puddle, so watch out.
I've actually had this conversation with friends in the pub as well. Like, one of my friends was made that very point that you just made, you know, saying, how do we know we're actually here? What do we suppose we do? It could be like the Matrix, couldn't it?
Exactly, yeah. We just don't know. Yeah. Well, and there are those who, in the world of like quantum physics and such, who claim that time is not actually linear, that all of past, present, and future are all happening at the same time, it's just that we happen to be traveling through them in one direction. And I'm not someone whose mind can handle physics, so that all just makes me start drooling and really need to take a nap. But yeah, ultimately at the end of the day, I'm generally apathetic towards all things of a deep nature. It's possible. It's equally possible that that's true. It's equally possible that our concept of reality is exactly as it is and there's nothing more to it. It doesn't matter, though, because at the end of the day, we're here. And if we find a way to prove, disprove, or experience something else, fantastic! Let's go for it. Let's see what we can learn. We should always be learning and moving forward. But for right now, I know I'm sitting in a broken fucking chair in my pajamas. I've got a cold-ass cup of tea, and I've got Danger Mouse on TV, and I'm talking to a friend on the internet. And that's all I need to know for right now. So.
Hold on, you're watching Danger Mouse? Oh, I'm so jealous. Oh, Danger Mouse.
Me too. I actually still have, when I was very little, I was exposed to Danger Mouse. That made it sound creepy. Mm. At least he called himself Danger Mouse. I mean, he was a big white guy with an eye patch. And anyway. He said he was a spy. But I actually have a stuffed DM from when I was a tiny, tiny, tiny Patamus. And I have no idea if Danger Mouse ran on PBS or maybe HBO or something. I have no idea how I saw it, but I know I watched it avidly and was in love with it. And I still have Danger Mouse. He's beaten to shit and back, but he's still kicking.
Oh, Danger Mouse. Voiced by David Jason. David Jason is the Del Boy from One of the Frozen Horses.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Nice.
Because he also did, there was a spin-off from Danger Mouse called Count Duckula, and David Jason did the voice for that as well.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, literally the Duckula episode was just on. Spooky timing.
Yeah, weird. Yeah. Oh, you just gave me an idea. Desert Island cartoons.
That's perfect. There you go. It's all yours.
I just realised I can't do that. Because the abbreviation is dick.
I don't see why that's a problem. I think that's even better.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Moving on.
Oh, we're breaking the internet. Oh, what are we doing?
Yeah. John and Patrick has broken the internet live on Christmas Day.
Exactly.
Before we break it completely, we should better move on to number 7, I believe.
We should.
Number 7.
My computer's frozen. Number 7. Where is number... Oh, there we are. Number 7, Batman Returns. Because it's easy to forget that storyline happens at Christmas. I don't know how it's easy to forget because the fucking this little Miss model... Right? See? It's like I had two until I watched it not long ago. I'm like, snap, I forgot. But yeah, it's like the bats coming out of the Christmas tree and the little model like beauty pageant winner dressed like fucking Mrs. Claus who ends up with a fake batarang in her. It's just, oh, I love it. I mean, granted, Michael Keaton is my Batman. Always was, always will be. I appreciate what Christopher Nolan has done with Batman. He took Batman in this really bizarre universe and brought him into our world and made it believable. Yes, kudos. But Christian Bale is not my Batman. He never will be my Batman. He's just Christian Bale. But, oh, God. I wish I liked... When I was a kid, I loved Batman Returns the most. Like, that one was my Batman until Batman Forever came around. And then as an adult, I watched Batman Forever, and I didn't understand why it was ever my Batman movie. But, actually, no, that's not true. Tommy Lee Jones is 100% why that was my Batman movie. But anyway, Batman Returns, I was balls deep into. Like, I had the cereal, I had the posters, I had little books, I had the action figures, I had everything. It was my favorite. And I don't remember why, because I distinctly remember my mom had taken me. She had been on a date, and you know, she brought me along because I was old enough to be at the theater. Because time out, if you're a parent and you are bringing your children to the theater, make sure they're of an appropriate age. If they're going to be making any fucking noise through the thing, or if they're in danger of crying, fuck you. They don't belong there. Wait till they're older. If you can't get a babysitter, guess what, bitch? You don't go to the theater. Deal with it. But anyway, I was of an old enough age, and I was a shy, little quiet kid anyway, so I wasn't going to be the one running up and down the aisles. But I remember distinctly I was there for the beginning when we're introduced with the, like, you know, establishing storyline for Oswald. And then as the credits are, you know, the beginning credits are starting to go when we're in the sewer and whatnot, I remember exactly when I fell asleep, because I fell asleep throughout the entire film, and I didn't come in till the very end. And I was like, what the shit just happened? But for some reason, I still loved it. And then we bought it on VHS, and I wore out two copies of that thing. I just love it so much. And it doesn't feel like a Christmas movie, I'll give you that much. There's nothing about it, other than the few Christmas things that are going on, there's nothing about that that's Christmassy. But, I don't know, that mistletoe line is just so stupid, but it's so... That makes it a Christmas movie for me, just that it's a plot device. It's a really heavy, important plot device, and without that, they probably wouldn't have figured out who was who, because reasons. And I don't know. It's good. I like it.
I do. I actually loved the Tim Burton Batman films of the late 80s, early 90s, even Batman and Robin, which gets slated. I loved all four.
Obviously, yeah, it's goofy, and it's not a good film, but it's still Batman. It's still fun. It's still ridiculous shit going on, and it Arnold Schwarzenegger as Freeze.
Yeah.
I'll take it. It's fine. It's stupid, but it's great.
I mean, when you think about it, all four films in that series, the casting was just amazing. There was so many great actors in them.
Yeah, no kidding. I still think George Clooney, though I love him, he just didn't quite fit Bruce Wayne, but he fit a fuck ton better than Val Kilmer. Get out of my life, Val Kilmer. Granted, the only use I have for Val Kilmer is the Doors movie, so meh. But, and I guess Weird Science is okay too, but yeah, no, Michael Keaton, who was also the actor, he's the first actor who I was able to differentiate between characters, because Beetlejuice was a heavy-duty thing for me when I was a kid, and obviously Batman and Batman Returns were. And I don't know how old I actually was, but I was very young, and I was able to figure out, oh my God, that's the same person. And I guess in some way, he kind of ruined my life that way, because then, from that point on, I understood that actors were not the characters. The films weren't real. So I guess on one level... Thanks a lot, Michael Keaton.
You still get people that, even as adults, because, you know, they're a bit special, think that the character is the actual person. If you're not, like, you hear stories about people walking down the street and seeing somebody from Coronation Street and going, "Oh, you, why are you here? Not in the cafe."
Well, I'm sure Bryan Cranston has people who legitimately walk up to him looking for meds. I'm sure there are people who just think it's hilarious when they do that, but I'm sure for the most part there's a lot of people who just roll up on him going, "Hey, Walter, give me some."
Wasn't Val Kilmer, can't say that, Val Kilmer, not in The Mask as well? Or was that Michael? I know Jim Carrey played The Mask, but the bad guy in The Mask.
I'm trying to remember. I don't think it was Val Kilmer, but... It was some goofy-looking bitch.
I'm going to have to look it up. Yeah. but the Batman, the casting's good. Michelle Pfeiffer plays Catwoman, doesn't she, in Batman Returns?
Oh, she's gorgeous. Yeah. A film that has Michelle Pfeiffer in is kind of, but her as Catwoman, Eartha Kitt's my favorite, but Michelle is definitely a damn close runner, and she just did such, it was just such a good job. She's nuttier than squirrel shit, but she's also like, she nailed the sexy, she nailed the sassy, she nailed the hint of malevolence where you really don't know. She literally like did a good job of being a cat, because they are assholes and they just, you never know what they're gonna do. They love you 1 minute and then 2 seconds later they just scratch your face to shit. So she did a very good job. But also honorable mention to Christopher Walken. Being Christopher Walken, but still, it's Christopher Walken in a Batman movie, so I don't see an objection there.
Christopher Walken is such a great actor. He's one of those ones where it's always supporting roles that he plays. It's never the main part, but he's a brilliant supporting actor.
In The Prophecy, I think he's pretty much the main character, but at the same time, he's still, like you said, a supporting character, which is bizarre. He's actually the protagonist, because by definition, the antagonist, though typically we think the antagonist automatically means the bad guy, the antagonist is the one who's supposed to stop the story from moving, which is typically the villainous role. But even though he's playing the villain, he's the one who's trying to keep the storyline going as Gabriel. And I love Prophecy. I still, like, it. There are parts of it that aren't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But that film is just so brilliant. But yeah, other than that, I can't think of a single film where he wasn't a supporting character. And I watched him on years ago when Henry Rollins had his show on IFC. Christopher Walken was a guest. And I remember Hank was trying to... One, he was a little bit starstruck, which was adorable. But at the same time, he was going off about, you know, people don't realize that you have such a strong background in like musicals. You sing, you dance, you do all of these different, you know, amazing things. And Christopher Walken said, yeah, you know, the definition of an actor is to be able to play other people, believably. And I don't. I only ever play Christopher Walken. And so by that, I'm actually not a very good actor. And I was like, oh, Christopher Walken, that's not true at all. Because I've never not absolutely believed that you were either going to kill me or whatever you're supposed to be emoting, you do it. It's fine. Just the fact that you do it in your own way is not an objection. Jack Nicholson and John Wayne are the exact same fucking way. And no. But I was like, oh, Christopher Walken, it's not okay that you think that. But did you see last year, whoever had put together, back on our mashups conversation, somebody had mashed up all of his dancing scenes from his films?
No, not seen it.
Oh, John, I'm going to send you that link, and the world is going to be a better place.
Please do. I like stuff like that, as I mentioned. I think my two favourite Christopher Walken films, and again, supporting roles, but Pulp Fiction, I think he plays a brilliant part, and True Romance, he's brilliant in that as well.
Yeah, I think other than The Prophecy, I really do love him in Seven Psychopaths. I love that movie, but I think my favorite Christopher Walken is actually The Rundown. It's ridiculous, and it's a goofy-ass fucking movie, but you understand the concept of the Tooth Fairy. She takes the goddamn thing and she leaves you a quarter. It's just like so angry. I just love it so much.
I was spoiler alert for especially those kids listening, but obviously Santa doesn't exist. But I always put that.
What?
Yeah. Oh, seriously, doesn't.
No. Way to ruin Christmas.
I'm the Christmas Scrooge, but I always believed for the Tooth Fairy longer than I believed in Santa.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Tooth Fairy was more believable, I think.
Yeah, I can do that. So how old were you when you stopped believing in Santa?
29. No.
I still believe.
I don't know. I think deep down I always knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how believable is it that one man can go around the whole world in one night and deliver presents down chimneys?
Yeah. I think I believed until I was about 9, so, yeah.
It always puzzled me as well. I think this was a bit of a giveaway. Your mum and dad would say, oh, there's your presents from Santa, but it would say on the tag, from mum and dad.
My mom was crafty. She'd like anything that was supposed to be from Santa was written from Santa. Except after I got a little older, I started to realize Santa had very similar penmanship to my mother.
Yeah, funny that.
So I was a little bit worried. I was like, Mom, are you Santa? But unfortunately, I didn't figure it out from the other perspective. I was like, huh, maybe my mother's just Santa. I don't understand how that works. Like, Santa's a man. Mom? Something you need to tell me?
If that was the case, then you'd have been an immaculate conception. Because if your mum was a guy, she couldn't have given birth to you. So.
Well, I have been accused of being the Antichrist before, so I suppose, it's right up the street.
Yeah. Just to tie it up on something I said earlier on, it wasn't Val Kilmer. I don't know why I thought it was actually a guy called Peter Green that played the bad guy in The Mask. But I think where I'm getting confused is, I always remember the guy that was in The Mask was in another famous film, but in this case it was Pulp Fiction. He played Zed from Pulp Fiction.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, Val Kilmer's got that stupid face. No offense, Val Kilmer. That's not fair to pick on your face because you didn't do it. But he's just got that stupid face that kind of blends in with a lot of other people. And there have been a couple of times when I'm like, that better not be Val Kilmer. I'm turning this off. The only exception is Ghost in the Darkness. He did okay in that. I did like that. I don't know why I liked that film, but I did. But anyway, we're not talking about Val Kilmer. Nobody wants to talk about Val Kilmer. No. Fuck Val Kilmer. Get your ass out of here, Val. Go eat that donut.
Let's put him in that room next to Michael Bublé.
It'd be great if out of all the celebrities who could break down like in front of your house right now, it's Val Kilmer. Hi, can I? Fuck you, Val Kilmer! Ooh, it's not.
Yeah, those two can be keep each other company in the room.
Yeah, there we go.
Right, so I think we're on to game number 8, is it? I think it is. I've almost got it already.
Let me check my list because I'm prepared. Yes, we're on number 8. And number 8 is White Christmas. And honest to God, I have no idea why. When I was a kid, like I've grown up well exposed to film from the beginning era of film to today, and a huge percentage of my life, I have a fascination for classic rock, classic film, classic literature, etc. So I understand why I like White Christmas, but at the same time, what I like about it isn't what I'm supposed to like about it. And if you've not seen it, it's worth a view, like any, well, not any film, like White Girls is not worth a view, but White Christmas is, I don't give a shit about the Christmas aspect of it, I don't give a crap about most of the storyline, but there's a payoff in the end where, generally speaking, Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye were introduced to them, they were soldiers in World War II, and that was how they became friends, and they had put on a Christmas show, and their general, it was his last night as their general, and so we established this relationship. Then we fast forward after the war, Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye got together and started doing a show together. They're really big showmen, it's really great, and they hook up with Rosemary Clooney and Vera Ellen, who are going to go perform at this chalet out on the East Coast, and oh, what do you know, the general runs that chalet. Oh no, but he's on hard times for money, so what are we gonna do? And so the boys decide they're gonna bring the show here, and then Bing Crosby comes up with this really great idea to try and get all the men from the division together and come up and give the general a big Merry fucking Christmas send-off. That's the part that I like. I could give two shits less about 90% of the rest of the film. Like, I like Danny Kaye a lot. Bing Crosby, if you weren't a racist, child-abusing prick, I'd like him a lot more. But, and Vera Ellen looks at the fucking camera every time. I can't stand it. She's the Jimmy Fallon of a different generation. It's just awful. But the end, well, not the very end. The very end is, of course, the White Christmas song. But, which actually I vaguely recall was featured in an earlier film with Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire called Holiday Inn, which I couldn't care less about because I don't think it's a good film. But the quintessential part for me is when Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye got all the men together and they surprised the general with this song, We'll Follow the Old Man. I love that part. I have no idea why. Like, my grandfather had been in the Navy, but that wasn't a huge aspect of who and what he is or our relationship, so I really don't understand why I'm so drawn to this particular aspect. So it's very just honoring their general. It's honoring a fellow soldier and someone they looked up to, and it's just doing a really, really nice thing for, you know, an older guy who is too proud to ask for any help. He never asked for help throughout the entire film. It's just this nice, really cool gesture, and it's just so wonderful. That's the part of this movie I love. I could not care less about Rosemary Clooney getting together with Bing Crosby. Couldn't care less about Danny Kaye being just silly and goofy, or Vera Ellen, who is a brilliant dancer, but honest to God, she looks at the camera every time it's on her, and I hate it so much. But it's got brilliant music, and of course White Christmas has become a quintessential song that you can't go anywhere without hearing at Christmas time. But no, it is that moment that just, that makes it. And again, tying back to what Christmas means to me, that is just a huge act of kindness to try and help somebody. Because what's the end after all this? It doesn't mean that the fucking chalet has any more money. It doesn't mean that the general's not in any more debt than he was in originally. It doesn't mean that the day is actually even saved at all. It just means that for one couple of hours, this general got to just have this wonderful gift from the kindness of a friend who respects him dearly, and that's just cool. The fact that it's musically based, all right, I'll take that too.
I think most films in that era were musical based.
Yeah, almost all of them. And honest to God, I hate musicals. True story. I like the rock opera, don't like the musicals. My Fair Lady is the only musical that I like, and like, granted, I guess this is a musical, so I sort of like it, but there's only one part I do like, so it sort of almost comes. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of musicals. I like films with music in it, like the Commitments. I don't know if you've seen The Commitments.
Don't think I've ever heard of it.
You should look that up on, I don't know if you get it on Netflix or not, but it's basically this, and I picked this on my Desert Island Films with Steve. It's based in Northern Ireland. It was made in 1991. And basically, it follows this kind of soul band. It's like this guy that forms, he becomes a manager of this band. He recruits all the members, and they go around all the clubs playing music, basically. I'm not really describing it very well, but it's really well done. And if you like soul music, like rock soul music, it's really good. And basically, it's about how the band end up splitting up because there's too many egos in it and things like that. And how they were just about, they were like a whisker away from being signed up by a record label, and they were going to have Wilson Pickett come play with them on stage, but they all just fell out and they split up, and Wilson Pickett never turned up, but when the manager was away, like, walking home, all doom and gloom, a big limo came up and went, oh, excuse me, do you know where that venue is? And he goes, yeah, it's just up the road. And he realises, oh, that was Wilson Pickett in that limo. Yeah, it's really good. I'll just give it away the end there, so you watch it, you've given away the end.
Yeah, thanks. First Santa, now this. Thanks a lot, John.
Yeah. I am the new Christmas Scrooge.
You are. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Too late to apologize, John. Yeah. You've ruined it for everybody.
1954. I'll move it on before we get any more trouble. 1954, this film came out.
Yeah, in among the first films to have Buena Vista Vision, where they finally started being able to use a lot of color saturation because they were able to actually capture it on film appropriately. And goddamn, if that isn't executed in this fucking movie, so many colors.
Yeah.
Oh Christ, it makes you want to vomit.
And even I wasn't born in 1954. That's the thing. This is maybe not a good example, but you know, talking about films in this era, that's back in the day where actors had to be good actors because, you know, they didn't have any special effects, anything like that. They just had their own acting ability.
Yeah, well, and like, if granted, there were still some who were cast purely because of their looks, but like Humphrey Bogart is not an attractive man, but he's a goddamn good actor. And yeah, it's during that same era, you had to actually make it believable and you had to make it count. And boy, you know, it's a difficult line to draw between how an actor or an artist is in their performance art versus who they are personally, because I'm slightly hypocritical. I'm one of those who, like, I won't not like a musician when I find out that they're addicted to drugs, yet I abhor Bing Crosby when I find out he's a racist and a bigot. Well, kind of same sort of not really good life decisions going on here. And my favorite actor is H.P. Lovecraft. Writer is H.P. Lovecraft, and he's hugely racist. Like, unfortunately, to a really frustrating level when you're reading. So it's like, okay, well, you don't really have a right to be pissy about Bing Crosby.
Yeah.
But, and again, because he was, you know, whatever his personal life was, he was a fantastic actor, and he was a very good crooner. And it's, I guess now that I'm older, like when I was younger, I liked this film a lot more. I know part of my disenchantment with it is once I, you know, read his son Gary's book. But it's difficult because Danny Kaye is as gay as the day is long. And granted, this was during the era where you know, there's McCarthyism and you can't be gay. You can't be, there's no alternative lifestyles acceptable. This is America. This is how it is. This is the world. This is how it is.
Yeah.
And so it's just bizarre to watch now, thinking, wow, there's a scene where they're both dressed in drag. And I'm just sitting here like, and it's for comedic purposes only, but I'm just sitting here like, I really can't imagine how uncomfortable Bing Crosby was in this exact moment. I mean, I'm sure he didn't know Danny Kaye was gay, but it's just a very weird situation. And it's like all the magic is gone now. So the only magic I have that's left is in that one moment with the general. No, I can hold on to this. This I can hold on to. But, yeah, no, back then, it had to count, which is bizarre because sometimes you will watch a film from that era where nobody is doing anything good, and you're like, what the fuck? This is when you're supposed to act well, okay?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Danny Kaye is gay. Who knew?
Yeah, right. It's almost like it was just destined to be with his rhyming scheme. I don't know.
Okay, so I think we're on to number 9.
Number 9 would be How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And I was talking to my mom about this not that long ago. I honestly think, because I'm sure when I was younger I responded to Dr. Seuss, but as an adult it's just not there, and I don't know why, but it's not really the story. It's not really, which is surprising considering so far the running theme has sort of been, you know, bad guy who turns good. And the Grinch is just Ebenezer without money. He's a broke-ass Ebenezer who decides to steal instead of just being a dick in other ways. But I think the magic behind the 1966 How the Grinch Stole Christmas animated special is Boris Karloff. Because I love Boris Karloff completely, and so many people have a difficult time looking past him as being anything more than Frankenstein. He was only Frankenstein twice, I think. But he was such a magnificent actor, and unfortunately he was an actor who he didn't like to ad-lib. He was so classically trained that it had to be on the script, which makes the Raven, the Roger Corman film with Vincent Price, and a very young and beautiful Jack Nicholson, and Peter Lorre, it was a very difficult experience for him because these are some of his best friends, but at the same time, all of them can ad-lib and he can't, so that was a very difficult experience for him. But he as a person was just so from what I understand, so warm and so welcoming and so kind. And even though he was in incredible pain every day of his life because he had, you know, bad knees, he had a bad back, but he also just had that deliciously menacing tone that he could tell you he loved you and you would equally believe it and be suspicious of it at the same time. Like, ooh, but this, are you going to hit me with a hammer after you say it? Like, and that just velvety, bizarre emotional reaction that you get from Boris Karloff comes off in this story so well. He does such a good job of having that benevolence, but as well as that menace that makes this story exactly how it should have been told. And had anybody else narrated it, I really don't think it would have been a classic. Mm-hmm. So think, like, had Mel Blanc, you know, classic cartoon voice actor, done it, which would have been entirely acceptable. He did every other voice under the sun. It wouldn't, I really don't think it would have held up as well. And it's just something that's, I love it. Granted, the song at the end is still pretty touching. I'll give it that. It is kind of, Pahu Pore or whatever it is. But, yeah, no, it's all about the Karloff.
Yeah. I was getting mixed up with the 2000 version that came out, you know, Jim Carrey.
Yeah, fuck that version. Fuck that with a broken stick. Because, yeah. No. Like, I understand the idea. Like, and it was a cute idea when it came out. Like, oh, yeah, we could do this live action. And if anyone could try to do a live action Grinch, it would be that rubber-faced bonehead Jim Carrey. But I don't understand it being a full feature-length film. I could, like, it might have been better if it were just a short.
Yeah.
Stretching out that storyline, it's not even the fact that he's scary as hell as the Grinch, too. That's scary, scary makeup art. But, one, it being a Ron Howard film is confusing. We went from Apollo 13 to this. But, it's just, there doesn't need to be all this backstory. We don't need, everyone knows the story of the Grinch. You don't need to stretch it into an hour and a half. This is not necessary. It's just, all of it just seemed too much. And then it serves as a catalyst for the fucking Cat in the Hat film. No, Mike Myers. Oh, no, yeah. No. What are you doing?
I love Mike Myers, but that's not a good film.
That's the film that we all just pretend didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, we accept Love Guru long before we accept Cat in the Hat.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an old film. I mean, actually, this would have come out 3 years before Boris Karloff passed away.
I know.
Passed away 1969, aged 81. Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, he had a good run. He was Hollywood royalty, even if he wasn't treated like it.
Yeah.
He damn well deserved it. And
absolutely.
His show, yeah. Thriller, was, yeah, one of the creepiest fucking things I've ever seen in my life. But it, I just love him. I just love him so much.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to respect a guy that's had a 60-year career.
Exactly. Yeah. And he was never one who did it for the money. He always did it because he was interested in the story. I mean, I'm sure a couple of decisions were probably made because, well, script could use a little work, but I am getting paid this week, so I suppose. Like any actor in their early days, but I would think, for the most part, from what I understand, he just did it for the love of acting, and
yeah,
kudos. Go for,
yeah,
it.
I don't think I've actually seen this film, but I've definitely seen Frankenstein, the original Frankenstein. It's a classic. Yeah, he was also in the original Scarface, 1932.
Yeah. Which is weird. It's very strange to think that the Scarface we all know and love is a remake, isn't it? It's just like, what?
I don't
understand. How does this work?
It's bizarre.
It really is. And it's almost to a level of you just can't accept it. And I don't. I for some reason just imagine it as a reverse remake where somehow somebody came to the future and saw Scarface and went, okay, well, we can make that earlier.
Yes.
And then went back into the past and made it, and it's okay.
Yeah. I firmly believe that's exactly what happened.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See,
this, yeah,
history and science. We got them here.
Yeah. Yeah, they went back in the DeLorean and they did it.
Exactly. Yeah. That fucking Doc Brown, he's just doing all sorts of shenanigans.
Yeah.
Can't trust him.
and him as well, lecturing and Marty, don't change the future, but he went and done it himself. Yeah. Cool. So I think we're actually on to your last pick. Oh.
Yep. How the time has flown.
Yeah.
The last pick is a cliche and a half, but it's a deserved cliche, sort of. It's the Charlie Brown Christmas special.
Charlie Brown.
And, oh, Charlie Brown. I have no real clue what it is about this film that makes it stand up so strong when you put it against other really important stories of Christmas. Like, the strong Christian overtones are an aspect, and Linus's story, or Linus's moment where he, you know, does the lights please, and then does the whole spiel. It is still the Christian aspect of Christmas, but at the same time, it almost doesn't matter. It's not a sermon. It's not a preachy, yeah, this is all about baby Jesus. Even though what he quotes kind of gives the idea that it's supposed to be, and even though the song they sing is, you know, of the, you know, like, it's a hymn, mm-hmm. but the overall feel isn't, praise the baby Jesus, oh, it's all about the baby Jesus. It's about, nah, it shouldn't be about, you know, receiving and greed and all this stuff. It's about giving. It's about from the heart, and it's about love and understanding and being together. And I think maybe that's what I like so much about it. It could have gone somewhere very, very pretentious. And I guess it would have had every right to do so, because, hey, you know, you believe what you want to believe and you say what you want to say with your own art medium. But the fact that it could have, but it didn't, and it instead used this particular story that is used, you know, has been used for worship for so long, as more of, okay, yeah, here's this thing, here's this little example of what we all are supposed to be using to guide us in life, but it's not necessarily relevant as to who the characters are or what the story is, as long as the message that you took from it is just be love and be loved. That's all you gotta do. Mm-hmm. That's all Christmas has to be about. And I think that's pretty brilliant. And yeah. It is also hilarious. And I love the fact that all of the actors are actually children. It's fantastic. That's always been one of the things I loved about Peanuts productions of whatever kind, even if some of them are terrible, like the Election Day one is just painful. But it's like Schroeder at one point just getting so set, his moment with Lucy where she's just constantly picking on him about the stuff he's playing and like, oh, don't you have anything more Christmassy? And then he plays Beethoven and she's giving him shit about, oh, well, what's so great about Beethoven? What do you mean what's so great about Beethoven? Well, he was never in a bubblegum car. And even though apparently after that, Charles Schulz actually had in the Peanuts comic, after that premiered and was such a funny part, several of the comics, Schroeder would be shown with his bubblegum card that was featuring Beethoven. but I don't know, it's just got such goofy little one-liners in it. It's so sweet and it's so yeah. ridiculous. It's just wonderful. And it's just, and I still love the, it's today it's primitive, but I love the animation style of yeah. Peanuts from back then. It's just classy, I guess. Just classy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Have you ever seen that, the bit in Family Guy? I think it was one of the cutscenes in Family Guy. It's like years later, and Charlie Brown's like in his 40s or 50s, and he's a drug addict and snoop.
Yeah. I sold him the stuff!
Yeah. He sold him the stuff that called Snippy. Yeah.
Back before, I feel like Robot Chicken jumped the shark a couple years ago, and I haven't watched it in a while, but before I had abandoned them, they had done a couple different Christmas episodes, and one of them was a retelling of the Charlie Brown Christmas to yeah. the tune of Misery, and that was hilarious, Sally kidnaps Linus and breaks his legs. It's just so nuts, but I love it a lot.
Yeah,
and then at one point, the Charlie Brown, when he's trying to find what happened to Linus, he makes some comment about, "Oh, I can't find Linus. He was supposed to drive me to my chemotherapy treatment." Oh, dark. But yeah, I mean, it's easily set up for cannon fodder. It really, really is. But at the same time, it can survive it. You know, if you can if you have a piece of art of whatever kind it is, be it a comic book, be it, you know, art that hangs in the gallery, music, you know, film, TV show, whatever, whatever. If you've got it and you can make fun of it to hell and back, and yet it still stands just strong, you can't tarnish it by making fun of it, I think you did good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the 10 games. 10 games. Yeah. I keep seeing doing it again. 10 movies. I've been doing this for too long. It's just, you know, stuck in my mind. Like,
you're
games, games, games.
Shit, Dan.
Yeah. One thing I used to do on this, I've not done it for a while, but, you know, because it's, I don't know if you've ever heard of Desert Island Discs, which is basically what I'm ripping off. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a radio show here in the UK on Radio 4. BBC Radio 4, and basically they get to pick 8 discs, but they also get to bring like a book and a luxury item. But one of the things they give away is the complete works of Shakespeare. But on this show, you don't get that. You get the complete works of Steve Benway.
Oh, well, why would you need anything else?
Yeah. So when you're bored of watching your 10 films, you can stick on a bit of Steve Benway as well.
Maybe I could have them both going at the same time. That way, you know, yeah. It would be like Steve's right here with me. Poor guy.
Do you know what? I think that's why I stopped doing it, saying that, because I had Steve Benway on the show. I couldn't see the complete works of yourself. Yeah.
Well, for some people, they're, you know, egotistical, that it would be great. But, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't want to sit and watch my own complete works. Ooh.
No, I don't like watch myself. I the only time I ever listen to these back is when I'm trying to find, like, if I'm making a compilation or something, I need to listen through it to find the certain clips. But other than that, I don't like listening. I'll leave that for other people.
That for everybody else. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's pretty much on that level of, yeah. You know, I'll sit through my own bullshit just enough to make sure that I didn't fuck up. And usually, yeah. You can tell when I couldn't handle myself anymore if there's like a gap in the audio or something, or if there's a gap between scenes or something. It means I was just tired of my own shit. And I was like, nope, don't care. Press it, get it out.
To be honest, unless it's an editing error, like I've put the audio too low or something like that, I just leave the mistakes in.
Nice.
Yeah. I could be sitting.
It makes them all fall off.
I could be sitting recording something for 5 minutes and then fuck something up. I'm not doing that again. I could just stay in.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
It's more natural. It's more organic. It's good. It's better this way.
And now I wonder why I only get 10 views.
Yeah, but the 10 views by very happy people.
Yeah.
Very satisfied viewers.
There are 10. I don't get any thumbs down. I shouldn't tempt fate with saying that, but
she's like, careful.
I think it just gave me thumbs up because she feels sorry for me. That's what happens.
Oh, I got that. Yeah. I'm sure there are some people out there who do the sympathy thumbs up to all of us, but I think a thumbs up is earned, especially because it's not as easy as it used to be. You have to actually, like, depending on how zoomed in you are in your window, you have to like scroll down a little bit to find the fucking thumb, and then you gotta scroll back up. And if your computer's a piece of shit like mine, it freezes when you do that, and then you lose everything. The entire day is shot. Like, your feet don't work anymore, your teeth fall out, and your computer goes to sleep. Because it's dead. So yeah, it takes a thumbs up takes work, John.
It does.
Don't ever question it. A lot of first world problems work.
Yeah. Well, hoping for a few thumbs up on this one. So if you listen, you've made it all the way to the end of this broadcast, then well done, and give yourself and me a thumbs up.
If I had more thumbs, I'd give you even more, but you get two very, very seemingly dirty thumbs. What did I do? I've not done anything to have fucking... Oh, I spilled my coffee, that's right. That was why I ended up with you. You'd think I'm like, my job is to manage coffee, and you'd think I'd be better at putting the ground coffee in the filter and then putting the filter in the machine, but somehow I managed to fuck all that up, and it just went and there were coffee grounds everywhere, and there were dead children, and I don't even know, I just don't know, but yeah, coffee, you know.
Oh, well. Have a coffee and cheer up, and that'll cheer you up. Oh, no, wait. Oh.
Fuck that. I'm just going to enjoy my cold tea out of spite. And I'm just going to look menacingly over at the coffee pot like, yeah, see? Look what you've done. This is you. And it'll know. It'll know.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think we're at the end. It's been an absolute pleasure, and that's 2 hours, and it's absolutely flown in. It's been brilliant. We'll chat to you. Have you any closing thoughts before we go off here?
Just that I really hope you, John, have a wonderful, not even remotely hypocritical Christmas, because again, it's not about the baby Jesus. If you want it to be about the baby Jesus, it can be about the baby Jesus, but at the end of the day, it should be about friends and love, and I love you, man.
Well, same to yourself. I hope yourself and your family have a wonderful Christmas, and the same to everybody that's listening. If you listen to this on Christmas Day, why? You should be partying.
what are you doing?
But if you're Chris and you're listening to this on your bus, then I hope your shift's going okay. Because he listens to it on the bus.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Just spreading the good word of Desert Island Games to his riders. It's wonderful.
Well, that's it. We've come to the end. So again, Merry Christmas, everyone, and Happy New Year when it comes. Bye-bye.
Exactly. Bye. Have a good one.